From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made on Sunday, September 17th at 9 p.m. on PBS and, of course, WXXI-TV. It's the premiere of what PBS is calling a landmark documentary event, and that is almost a euphemism if you fully understand the remarkable work that has gone in for so long to a series called The Vietnam War. Vietnam War, of course, is something that our families, everyone in this country, has some connection to. But as time passes, the question is, what do we learn from war? And the creators of this series have taken a fresh look in a comprehensive way. 10 parts, 18 hours. They went through 25,000 photographs, dozens upon dozens of interviews, but maybe not with the people you would expect immediately, maybe not with necessarily on camera the biggest names that you would know. This hour is our chance to explore what is coming your way in this remarkable series with Lynn Novick, who is co-director and producer with Ken Burns of The Vietnam War, the forthcoming documentary series. Lynn, it's a great honor of ours to have you. Thank you. How are you?
Thank you, Evan. It's great to be here. I'm great.
Are you feeling any sense of relief or you know, any sense of putting a cap on all of the work that has gone into this project?
You know, Ken and I talk about this a lot, that it was 10 years in the making, and it was pretty much all-consuming for many of those years. And we really were sort of devastated to finish the film and sort of say goodbye to the process of working on it. But we're also extremely excited about the prospect of the country getting to know some of the remarkable human beings that we have gotten to know and hearing their stories. So we're excited for the film to come out.
Listeners, I want you to mark your calendars for a number of events here. First of all, August 24th, coming up 3 weeks from today at the Little Theater, both hours of Connections will be devoted to Vietnam War conversations in advance of the release of this project on PBS. So that's August 24th. We'd love to see you at the Little Theater that day. More details forthcoming in the days to come here. I mentioned, of course, the launch of this series September 17th at 9 p.m. The first five episodes will air nightly. And from Sunday, the 17th of September, through Thursday, the 21st, the final five episodes airing Sunday, September 24th, through Thursday, September 28th. And it's going to re-air on a weekly basis from Tuesday, October 3rd, through November 28th. You can also watch a roughly half-hour preview, kind of a trailer and promotional film that will help you understand the work and the ideas that have gone into this project. And producer Megan Mack and I will link you to that if you want to see that. Lynn, you and Ken both mentioned in that preview film that I had a chance to see that you understand so much has already been written, so much has been said, but what you wanted to do, from what I gather, is a couple of things. You want to do this in a comprehensive way, and you both feel that if we want to understand war, you kind of need the passage of time. You might need a generation to kind of breathe, step back, and then reevaluate and say, what really happened here, and what did we learn? Take me through that.
Yes, exactly. You know, we usually want 25 years at least before we have any perspective on an event that would take us from the realm of journalism into the realm of history. When you're in the middle of something, it's very hard to know what's actually going on. And we have always felt the Vietnam War was signally important, perhaps the most important event in American history in the second half of the 20th century since World War II. But it's also because it was so traumatic and so complex and it didn't end the way we hoped and there was so much bad feeling and sort of bitterness about it, so much pain, that we never really took a hard look at what happened and why and who we should blame for what happened and what went wrong. And so we decided 10 years ago to take a fresh look at this story with the passage of time, as you say. And also was very important to us from the beginning that we would not try to look at the Vietnam War as a solely American experience, because too often when Americans talk about Vietnam, we're just talking about ourselves. And we didn't think it would be possible to understand any of the questions we wanted to look at if we didn't hear from Vietnamese as well.
You traveled to Vietnam and you had a chance to discuss the war and how it's impacting that society today. But I was struck by the fact that you said when you sort of look around, there's very little evidence that a war of that scale happened, right?
Yeah, I made three trips to Vietnam. I'm about to go back again. And the thing, it is sort of striking that you just do not see evidence of the war around you. And when you think about the scale of devastation that happened there, it's remarkable how much has been sort of rebuilt or built over. But it's an incredibly resilient society. The people are hardworking and optimistic and forward-looking, and yet they're not unaffected by what happened there. So you sort of have to ask the right questions. And once you scratch the surface, there's a lot to be said and to be learned.
Listeners, if you want to join the conversation, if you've got questions for Lynn Novick, the co-director and producer with Ken Burns of the Vietnam War, that forthcoming documentary series, it's a chance for you to call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Certainly, if you have your own recollections of the war, maybe when you were growing up or thinking about how it impacted you or your family, if you're wondering how Lynn and Ken decided to go about the process of gathering stories and telling stories, because in some ways 18 hours feels like you've given it a remarkable amount of time, but in other ways, Lynn, I am sure you cut stories that you couldn't believe you were going to end up leaving out, probably.
Yes, we did. That happens on every project, and it's sort of heartbreaking because people, and especially on this topic, everyone we spoke with was so generous and courageous to tell us their stories. And we did speak to thousands of people. We interviewed 100 people. There are 79 people that appear on screen in the film, and there's a great deal of material that's not included. But that said, you will meet quite an interesting and remarkable cast of characters over the course of these 18 hours. We have people who fought in the war, in the Marines, in the Army, in the Air Force. We have people who protested the war at home. We have Gold Star families. We have journalists. We have policy analysts. We have a doctor and a nurse, you know, a pretty wide range of perspectives on the American side. And then we also have in Vietnam civilians and combatants on the North and the South, the winning and the losing sides. And one of the things that really struck us over time was seeing that we can understand how the war was so controversial and complicated for Americans. It drove families apart. It drove our societies apart. It really, as one of our interviewees, a veteran, said, it drove a stake right in the heart of America. But it also caused a tremendous amount of inner conflict in people. So a number of soldiers that we spoke with, former soldiers, had really mixed feelings about their participation in the war. If they were drafted, they maybe didn't want to go, but they wanted to serve their country and do the honorable thing, but they really had mixed feelings about whether the war was right or winnable. Or there were soldiers who went over to Vietnam believing in everything they were told, and as soon as they got there, began to question the military's representation of the war or what they were being told by the leaders in Washington. So, you know, sometimes the film challenged our ideas about patriotism and courage. One of the veterans we spoke with, he wrestled with whether to go to Vietnam. He was drafted, and he really didn't feel that the war was right, but he was afraid to not go. And he said that is, for him, the act of cowardice. Going to Vietnam, you know, was not brave. That was the cowardly thing for him to do. So it's just, this is a deep and complicated story, and it raises all kinds of questions, some of which we can never answer.
I think some of our listeners will assume they're going to see people like John McCain and John Kerry interviewed for this. And I thought that was very interesting, your decision on that. Tell us about it.
Yeah. Well, we felt that this is, we wanted to really look at this story with fresh eyes, and that the people who are today most well-known because of their associations with the war, and that would be John McCain, John Kerry, you could talk about Jane Fonda, Henry Kissinger. There's a few other people that you might put into that list. They've told their stories many times. They are public figures. We didn't expect them to probably shed a lot of new light on this experience and what it meant and their role in it. So what we did is we include them in the film archivally. So you will see or hear all the people I just mentioned doing and saying things that they did and said at that time on film or on tape. And you'll understand their role in this very complicated story, but we don't hear from them. Instead, what we do is we've interviewed many people that I think our audience won't be familiar with. And so what that means is you don't know how their story ends, and many of these people's experiences take many twists and turns. So there's a lot of, I think, surprises in the film that we're sort of liberated from hearing the same stories again from the people who we already probably know what they're going to say.
Here's an email from a listener named Jack who says, here's a very broad question. And so what I'll do is I'll read Jack's question. Then I've got a clip from the film, and I think that will help start to answer it, but it's probably a much more complex answer than the question sort of assumes.
Okay.
Jack just says, how are you going to portray protesters? And and I know that's a very broad question, particularly in how complex things were. I mm-hmm. want to listen. I think we've got a clip from a woman, and tell me if I'm pronouncing it right, Nancy Biberman. She talks about, you know, what it is like to look back having protested and, you know, some of the complexity of emotion that you feel with the passage of time. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to some of what Nancy had to say.
I've been to the wall more than once. When I look back at the war and, you know, think of the horrible things, you know, we said to, you know, vets who were returning, you know, calling them baby killers and worse. I feel very sad about that. I can only say that, you know, we were kids too, you know, just like they were.
Really, powerful stuff already, and that's just a less mm-hmm. than 30-second clip there.
Right.
So to Jack's question, how are you going to portray protesters? Yeah. I know it's broad, but how would you answer that?
Right. Well, you know, it is a broad question, and we have 18 hours to tell the story, and it's a complex narrative that evolves over time. And we trace the anti-war movement from its very early days in the early 1960s when it grew out of a peace movement, anti-nuclear movement, and the civil rights movement, and these various threads of protest and sort of public conscience about our country behaving morally, and how that evolves over time as the war sort of becomes inexorable and gets bigger and bigger, and the casualties keep mounting, and the reasons for protest and the nature of the protest evolves. And we get to know many people who are involved in this, and we hear them explain what they believed in and why they did what they did, and what they felt was important about holding our government accountable for decisions and for behaviors and policies that they felt were wrong. So we do not shy away from some of the people who participated in the anti-war movement critiquing it also. At a certain point late in the war, there was a radical fringe, very much a small number of people that got involved in bombings and, you know, more sort of radical violent protest, and that kind of splintered the anti-war movement, and Nancy Biberman speaks about that in the film. And one of the activists that we spoke with, Bill Zimmerman, he talks about how, you know, there was a certain point when the majority of the country agreed with the peace movement, but that there was, you know, they weren't necessarily able to channel that in the most productive way at that exact moment. So I think we have a complicated look at the evolution of the anti-war movement. And what she's saying there is a very honest reflection on the fact that she understands that now what she didn't understand then, which was that there was in some quarters, and this is not everywhere, everyone, all the time by any means, a kind of confusion of the warriors with the war, and that the soldiers coming home felt that they were being singled out and blamed for policies that they had nothing to do with. And that's not to say that everybody in the anti-war movement blamed the soldiers. That's absolutely not true. But it did happen. And so we have to be fair and balanced about that as well. But, you know, one of the most moving scenes in the film is Vietnam veterans coming home late in the war and forming a movement to protest it while they're still in uniform. And that had never happened in American society. And the scenes that we have dedicated to that are extraordinarily important in the story that we're telling.
Lynn, can you tell me a little bit about how you approach a project this large from the lens of bias is the wrong word, because we're all human mm-hmm. beings. We all may have ideas going in, but you and Ken really seem to be people who are very intellectually open and curious, that you want to hear other perspectives. In some ways, it seems like, you know, you're very open to maybe surprise, or at least the idea that what we assume we know about something is not necessarily so, you know. And so, of course, we're human beings. We can create any kind of project, any kind of documentary through any kind of a lens. But how do you make sure you're doing it in a way that you feel very comfortable is not about whatever your preconceived notions might be?
Yeah, that is really the central challenge of a project like this, and really of anything that we do together. Ken and I are, of course, aware of our own subjectivity. You can't not be, and anyone who tries to claim that they are purely objective is not actually a human being. Maybe a computer could be objective. But, you know, we all have baggage and perspectives and experiences that shape our understanding. And what we tried to do on every project, but it was particularly important here, was, as you say, to keep an open mind. And so every day we learn things that we didn't know about the war. And, you know, in the process of interviewing people and getting to know them and hearing their stories, keeping an open mind is probably the most important quality that we strive for, because you never know what someone's going to tell you. And if you're judging or deciding that they're right or wrong or, you know, compromised in some way, whatever, you're going to miss what they're trying to tell you. So throughout the process of making this film, we just tried to keep our baggage at the door and listen to what people had to say and understand where they were coming from and why they thought the way they did and why they saw the world the way they did and why they made the decisions that they made at that time and how it has affected them now. And it's been an incredibly challenging exercise intellectually, emotionally, spiritually, and in every other way. And as a result, the most rewarding, I think, for all of us working on the film. And then, you know, that's just us personally in the process, but we also don't do this alone. We bring in, as we do on every film, but it was especially essential here, a board of advisors that have many different points of view and expertise, sort of areas of expertise. So we, even if we had our own ideas about things, they keep us very, very honest. We had military historians, presidential historians, cultural and social historians, political, you know, we had veterans from many different experiences. We had Vietnamese advisors, and we had Vietnamese American advisors, people who had spent time in Vietnam during the war, and much later, Americans who spoke fluent Vietnamese and had studied in the archives there. So we really always kept our process very open. And Jeff Ward, our writer, Ken and Sarah Botstein and I, our producer, we just love the sessions we had with our advisors, because they would, you know, hold our feet to the fire on every single sentence in our film and challenge everything we're saying and everything that anyone in the film is saying in an interview. And it just, I think, made for a richer and more complex portrait.
One of the things that your co-director Ken Burns said in that preview short film there was that so often what you think you know or what you think you understand turns out to be wrong. And, you know, without giving too much away of what we're going to see on PBS starting in September, what's an example that you think the audience might be surprised about or might have an assumption about regarding Vietnam that might not be on the money, Lynn?
Yeah, there are so many, and we sort of hesitate to give too much away, but yeah. One of the things that we learned over the course of making the film was that our government did not really understand much about who we were fighting with or against, who were our allies, who were our enemies, what really drove them, and who they were. So there was a lot of trying to figure out, you know, who is the Viet Cong and what makes them tick, who are the enemy, and the lack of knowledge or understanding about Vietnam, Vietnamese culture, politics, history, all of that was a huge problem for us in trying to wage a war there. And one of the most important things that our leaders did not know was who was actually making decisions in Hanoi that would affect the course of the war. We all have heard a lot about Ho Chi Minh, who was the symbol of the Vietnamese Revolution and the, you know, the leader of the country and the public persona that everybody sort of rallied around. But as it turns out, there was a complicated sort of power dynamic behind the scenes in the Politburo. And there was another man named Lê Duẩn, and he rose in influence and power over the course of America's involvement in Vietnam. And so that by the time of the Tet Offensive, Lê Duẩn was promoting this idea of this massive attack all across all of South Vietnam that he thought would end the war. And Ho Chi Minh was against it. And they had quite an argument about it, and Ho Chi Minh was sort of sidelined, and the attack went forward. That was revelatory to all of us, that our, you know, we thought we were fighting one person. There was someone else actually very much involved in making decisions.
Hmm. We're talking
and,
to...
yeah, that was, you know, you can imagine, just amplify that across the whole war.
Yeah.
You can see why we got into such trouble there.
Talking to Lynn Novick, the co-director and producer with Ken Burns of the Vietnam War, and you have a chance to see 18 Hours, a documentary film that is going to tell the story of Vietnam in a comprehensive way and in so many ways a fresh way with different and new voices. It premieres Sunday, September 17th at 9 p.m. Please set your schedule so you can be with WXXI TV and PBS that night and for the launch of the Vietnam War. You know, so often in the past, you have seen such great documentary work on such a range of subjects. Vietnam hadn't been touched yet, and Lynn, you know, we've heard the Civil War, you know, the Great War, World War II. Vietnam became sort of inevitable when those projects were happening, didn't it?
Yes. Well, Ken famously vowed after he finished the Civil War series in 1990 that he was never going to do another war. But he and I decided to tackle the Second World War around 2000, 2001. And we spent 6-7 years working on that, and that film came out in 2007. And as we were finishing work on it, we decided that we would indeed tackle the Vietnam War. We had a few other projects already planned, so we didn't jump right into it with both feet. But, you know, it's a combination of things. Wars are extraordinarily important in sort of human existence. So to understand the human condition, you can't ignore war. And then in American history, these wars, the ones we focused on, have had seismic effects on our society and sometimes catastrophic effects. And so to ignore it or avoid dealing with the Vietnam War felt like we couldn't get away with that forever.
I want to, in a second, listen to a clip about what combat is like. And this clip comes from the film that I think turns our attention in a different direction because, well, listeners, regular listeners know, yesterday I had a conversation with an Iraq War veteran who is an author, and now he is a leader in certainly a leader in the peace effort, but also in sort of the movement to convince people that war is not necessarily part of the human condition, that war is that violence is not part of the human condition, that it comes from a lot of different things, but we shouldn't just accept that war is inevitable. And what I thought was interesting in the clip we're about to hear is the idea that we often just say war is hell, but there is a complexity, there is some texture here that we should really consider, because it maybe isn't quite that simple. So let's listen to the comments here about what combat is like from the film, and then we'll come back and talk about it.
Combat is like crack cocaine. It's an enormous high, but it has enormous costs. And I think that we make a big mistake if we say, oh, war is hell. We all know the war is hell story. It is, but there's an enormously exhilarating part of it.
I admit, Lynn, that it's frightening to hear that war can be exhilarating, but that's a very honest comment there. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, it is indeed. The speaker there is a veteran named Carl Marlantis, who was in the Marines. He received the Navy Cross. He's written a novel many, 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 many years later about his experiences. And he's thought quite a lot about this very important question that you raise. And I'm not sure we'll ever get to the bottom of it. And if you talk to 10 veterans, you'll hear 10 different perspectives on it. But, you know, what he's trying to say there is, you know, it's no accident that we get into wars and that young men in particular are so easily prepared for war and participate in war because there's something in us that we do have violent tendencies and aggressive tendencies, as well as tendencies for compassion and love and concern and, you know, courage and generosity. So we have to embrace, I think, you know, understanding that human beings are capable of both. And he thinks it's hardwired in us. He certainly has earned the right to say so from his combat experiences, and he's thought about this and talked to other veterans as well. The larger question that he raises in the film is, you know, if it is true that combat is exhilarating and that young men and women in the right situation can very easily participate in it and not enjoy it, but be successful at it, we have to be careful, you know, not to unleash that impulse so readily because of the cost for those people and for the society. So, you know, the truth is somewhere in the middle here. I think it's dangerous to think that people love violence and, you know, it's inevitable. I think the inevitability of it is maybe the part that I'm not so sure. Our film certainly doesn't say that. But, you know, one of the things we found really interesting was speaking to Vietnamese veterans as well. And one of the most thoughtful that we spoke with, a man named Nguyen Ngoc, he started fighting against the French in the 1950s, and he stayed in the war for 30 years until finally the Americans left, and then they finished off with the South Vietnamese. So he had many, many years to think about what happens when young men fight. And he said, you know, human beings are incredibly savage, and more savage than wild animals. We think tigers are savage beasts, but, you know, tigers only kill when they need to eat. but people kill for other reasons. And he said, you know, when you kill your first person, it's terrifying and it feels wrong and horrible. And then you get used to it.
You get used to it. Wow.
Yeah. So it's, I think we have to recognize, and I'm not a combat veteran, but I've spoke to many, many over the years, that there is a part of each person that is capable of this, yeah, for sure.
Before we get to your phone calls and a couple more emails that have come in for Lynn Novick, my guest, who's the co-director and producer with Ken Burns of The Vietnam War, the forthcoming film series that you're going to see starting on Sunday, September 17th on PBS and WXXI-TV. I just wanted to ask you, Lynn, about this question of divisions, the way, you know, you can talk to 10 different veterans and they have 10 different mm-hmm. views on war or how it impacted them. But we not only as a society, as you noted, were torn up and divided over this, but some people felt those internal divisions over their own actions and everything. Did mm-hmm. you have any concern in creating this film that you could sort of reignite or reopen those divisions? Or do you think that we're at a point where it's always going to be raw and difficult for some, but these are questions that have to be asked?
Yeah, well, we were aware of the possibility, and there were times over the course of the production where sometimes a veteran or a protester or someone who just lived through this era and felt, you know, angst about it would say, why are you going to go reopen old wounds? Let sleeping dogs lie. Let's just move on and let's just forget it happened. Let's just not go there. But we felt pretty strongly that the Vietnam War is still with us, whether we want to talk about it or not, and that, you know, in the beginning of the film, Carl Marlanta says it's like living in a family with an alcoholic father. And, you know, you say, shh, we don't talk about that. But not talking about it doesn't make it go away. And in that metaphor, not talking about the problem just probably makes it worse. And so acknowledging the divisions and the conflicts that we've had over this extremely painful event, we hope will open the door to a new kind of conversation. But we sort of had to find out what happened first. Because part of the reasons why there's such rancor and bitterness is because people don't really know that much about what actually happened. So putting the pieces together, kind of filling in the pieces in the puzzle that we didn't know, we think will promote a different kind of conversation. We expect there will be some very heated arguments. It's a tragedy, and many people suffered here and in Vietnam and on all sides of the spectrum. And there's hard feelings and there's, you know, grief. So, of course, it's going to be painful. But we've seen in our screenings and in events we've been doing around the country that there seems to be openness about the possibility that we could talk about this in a different way. And that's what we're hoping will happen.
My guest Lynn Novick's forthcoming film is The Vietnam War. And we're going to get to your phone calls after our only break of the hour right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, it's the Summer of Food on Connections, and we are exploring the same kind of question we had in the Finger Lakes. This time we turn to Rochester. If James Beard were alive today and he was updating his book on American cookery, what would he say about the Rochester food culture and the scene? What recipes would he include? Would he include a garbage plate? Is that our core food identity? We'll talk about all that and more next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's get some of your phone calls in. Lindsay in Rochester. Go ahead, Lindsay.
Hey, Evan. I just wanted to call in. I'm a daughter of a Vietnam veteran here in Rochester, and I really want to say, first of all, that I appreciate the fact that that these folks are going ahead and they're making a documentary about the Vietnam War, because I really agree with the fact that there's a lot of people that would prefer not to talk about it, and I think it will help us find a way to heal if we know more about what's going on or what went on and try to understand that. But as for the comment about the human condition, I guess I also just wanted to put it out there that I think that we give that too much power. I think that one of the huge problems that we have in our country today and has happened over like the last several decades is that we no longer provide our young men and young women, but especially our young men, with a way to complete a rite of passage to go from young adult to a man, to prove themselves worthy of their family and their country. And I think that there's other ways that that can happen as opposed to just putting a gun in their hand and sending them off to war. And I think we limit ourselves by believing that the human condition is to fight and to kill. I think that we've trained ourselves to believe that, but there's other countries around the world. And, you know, I'm not a historian or an anthropologist, but I know that there are other ways to show men and women, young adults, that they have another option to prove themselves worthy of their family and country. So it's something to just think about, that, that war is not the only way to prove that you're a worthy human being.
Lindsay, thank you for the phone call. I'm going to work backwards because, Lynn, my guess is that's exactly the kind of conversation that you hope to inspire with a film like this.
Yes, exactly. That's beautiful and very well said, and I could not agree more. And I don't. Maybe I misspoke in explaining what I meant about the human condition. I didn't mean that this is the only way, but it's just that it is. There is something in us that resonates with war and violence, but that's certainly not something that we as a society would like to encourage. And, you know, this very central question of identity and sort of belonging to something is at the heart of what happens in this story, actually, because we have a generation of people coming of age inspired by John F. Kennedy and a kind of a muscular force, a vision of America as a muscular force for good in the world, and that we would sort of, you know, coming out of World War II and the sense that we were triumphant and the good guys, the knights on the, you know, the white knights on the horse, whatever the metaphor, that would be our continuation of our American role in the world. And it really ran aground in Vietnam for many, many reasons and caused us to question this very point. And that's very healthy. I mean, that's one of the things that we, Ken and I, feel we learned a bit about, you know, that I started off by saying the Vietnam War drove a stake in the heart of the country, and that's tragic. But it also caused some questioning of some assumptions that are healthy. And one of them is, you know, what does it mean to be a patriot? And do you obey your government and go off to war, whether or not the war makes sense? You know, where at what point does the citizenry stop just saying whatever the government tells us to do is fine and starts questioning, are our leaders right? Do they know what they're doing? Do they have good intentions? Are they competent? And are they telling us the truth? And so when something as precious as human life is at stake, and not just our lives, but millions of Vietnamese lives as well, a very healthy thing happened in our society, which was to begin to hold our leaders accountable in a different kind of way than we had before.
Let me get to David and Aurora next on the phone. Go ahead, David.
Hi. I spent 4 years in the Air Force from 1965 through 69, but I was stateside the whole time, so I didn't really understand what was going on. I came out about as ignorant as when I went in. So I'm curious whether a film which was so important, in my understanding, Born on the 4th of July, whether Ken Burns or any of the people actually looked at that film, which I thought mm-hmm. was so essential as showing the disillusionment from being in high school and joining the Marines and then getting injured, and then his respondent, this is Kovacs, the person who wrote this book, which the film is based on, whether they were influenced at all by that.
Well, it's a beautiful film, and you know, Ken and I have seen, I'm sure, most of the Hollywood films about Vietnam as they came out, you know, Platoon, Full Metal Jacket, Apocalypse Now, Coming Home, Born on the 4th of July, and many other films. And so they certainly, I can't say that we didn't know about them. We absolutely did. We also met many veterans, as I think I said earlier, who had similar experiences to Ron Kovacs, who wrote the book. Max Cleland, who's a triple amputee, he lost both legs and an arm in Vietnam and became a senator and went into politics eventually. And he didn't join Vietnam Veterans Against the War, but he eventually came home and went into politics, and in his role in the Georgia State Senate, tried to sponsor amendments or bills to, you know, get America out of Vietnam. So, and he had gone over there completely idealistic and enthusiastic about what we were doing. And that does happen over many stories that we tell in the film and many people that we spoke to who shared their stories with us. On the other hand, there are also people who, you know, went there and believed in it and came home believing in it. So, you know, there's no one way to look at this story, and that's why we tried to tell it from as many points of view as we possibly could.
All right, David, you want to follow up there? Go ahead.
No, I'm That's a great answer, I think.
All right. Thank you, David. Yeah, I mean, appreciate that.
The one thing I was going to add, I think, David, what you your point that you didn't know that much about it, but when you went into the military and when you came out, I think that that's pretty common. Many people we've spoken to have said just because even if they were in Vietnam, they don't know anything about the war. You only know the part that you could see. And believe me, there's a lot that was going on that you couldn't possibly have seen at that time. Our film is going to take you into the Oval Office, and you're going to hear tapes of our presidents talking to their senior team about what to do in the war and whether we're winning or not and what we can do about it and how they're going to win the next election and how to sort of maneuver themselves in or out of the war throughout the whole devolution of this. And there's no way that anyone who lived through this at that time could possibly know anything about that. And that's just one example, not to mention what was a Vietnamese soldier thinking or, a Vietnamese truck driver who's trying to get down the Ho Chi Minh Trail while being bombed from American pilots or prisoners of war, Americans who were in Hanoi and a Vietnamese prisoner of war who was kept in Saigon. So we sort of turn our focus to many different places over the course of this 18 hours. So I think you'll find a lot of things that you didn't know.
On that score, I think we've got some audio of President Johnson discussing Vietnam.
And great.
Lynn will probably be able to correct me. I think this audio comes from as far back as 1964.
That's correct, all right, 64. So that's very early. He hadn't been in office very long.
Very early. And listen to these comments from Johnson on Vietnam.
I just stayed awake last night thinking about this thing. The more I think of it, I don't know what in the hell. It looks like me, we're getting into another Korea. It just worries the hell out of me. I don't see what we can ever hope to get out of there with once we're committed. I don't think it's worth fighting for, and I don't think we can get out. It's damned easy to get in a war, but it's going to be awfully hard to ever extricate yourself.
Oh, devastating. Lynn?
Heartbreaking. Even today it makes me it's just heartbreaking, wrenching to hear that and know what lies ahead, which is, hundreds of thousands of Americans on the ground fighting, and ultimately 58,000 killed and as many as 3 million Vietnamese. It's really, really devastating, and that's not the only conversation like that that you will hear in our film. Mm.
The film, if you're just joining us, The Vietnam War, launches on Sunday, September 17th at 9 p.m. The first 5 episodes are going to air nightly, of course, on your PBS station, WXXI-TV, starting Sunday, September 17th through that Thursday, and then the next 5 episodes the following Sunday through Thursday. I know you're going to be locked into that because this is a series that is... I don't even really know what to say other than when you even see the preview clips, there are things and considerations that I've never had and my father served. And just like Lindsay, uh-huh, who called earlier, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how younger viewers who did not serve react to this compared to the generation that did and that's a little bit older now. There's going to be conversations about this film. And so we're just trying to get you ready for that with Lynn Novick, the co-director of the Vietnam War. And Lynn, I want to read this email before I get back to your phone calls, mm-hmm, because... I always tell the audience here, they can be critical of me, the show, uh-huh, as long as they're substantive, and I'm sure you've heard just about everything. So let's go.
Okay, let's hear it.
Let's hit it. Mike says, Evan, this conversation begs for a huge reality check. Everything she said about their reasons for producing the series have been covered and studied for the last 40 years. So what new ground are they breaking? Isn't it clear that this is... money. And then Mike goes on to say, I studied Vietnam in college. My brother was a conscientious objector during the war. Two areas that have not been widely covered are the military's push to extend U.S. involvement and Kissinger's role in the conflict. Mike calls it Kissinger's criminal role. And he says, I've not heard your guest raise those issues, but for some reason this may be moot because it sounds like it's all news to you, Evan, but still I enjoy your program.
Okay.
I'm glad you emailed, and I'm sure Lynn has heard all of that too because there's a lot of emotion on a project like this. So Lynn, mm-hmm, go ahead.
Right. Well, I guess I would ask the Mike who wrote the email to withhold judgment till he sees the entire film. For someone who has, if there are people who have immersed themselves in the study of the Vietnam War for the last 40 years, the experts are probably not going to have a lot of new information coming to them as a result of this film. That said, what we have done has never been done before in a documentary. So if you were to read every book about the Vietnam War that's come out in the last 50 years, you're probably not going to get a lot of new facts from our film. But that's not what this is about. We're trying to show a new to aggregate new scholarship into a documentary film that is available to a general audience who isn't going to sit down and read every book on the shelf. And what's been really gratifying for us is seeing even those experts who've seen the film finding that the way we've put the story together is new. It has never been done this way. One of our advisors, a retired general who was a fighter pilot during the war, he said that he had studied the war, he had served in the war, he had thought he had a deep understanding of all the dynamics at play, but he felt he didn't know that much about it until he saw the film, and that there were so many, it was sort of like a big mosaic, and he had some of the pieces, but there were a lot of blanks, and that our film has, by putting everything kind of in chronological order and shifting perspectives between Americans and Vietnamese and Hanoi, Saigon, and Washington, and from the top down and the bottom up, and looking at popular culture and what's on the TV and what's on the radio and what's playing on the airwaves, all of these things, that he felt that he now had a complete picture of the puzzle, that the pieces were filled in. So I would love to hear what Mike thinks when the film has come out. I think it will be revelatory, even for someone who knows a lot about it, because you're going to hear voices that you haven't heard and dimensions of this that even if you know a lot about it, you probably didn't know.
All right, back to the phones we go. John in Rochester next. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Yeah, I was going to just bring up the point that I think we got out of Vietnam too early. I think that the media over the Tet Offensive, as an example, our losses there were blown out of proportion, and that really turned the tide as far as public opinion goes. The fact is, I will watch that film. It'll be interesting to see. The fact is, Mao Zedong and Red China was on the march. They were a brutal, genocidal dictatorship, and I think our involvement in Vietnam stopped their momentum to a great extent and saved a lot of lives going into the future. In fact, after we withdrew, millions of people were killed in Cambodia and Vietnam by the communists. And if we would have stuck in there, we might have been able to get a line of demarcation similar to what we have in Korea. Between the North and the South. Well, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I urge you to watch the film. It's hard for me to answer all of those questions. I'll start with the question of whether we could have ever gotten a settlement like we had in Korea. And our military leaders and the policymakers did not think that was possible because the Ho Chi Minh Trail was impossible to stop traffic on the Ho Chi Minh Trail. So North Korea was a peninsula, so it was much easier to seal off South Korea from North Korea and prevent supplies and material and people from going back and forth. But because you have Laos and Cambodia right next to Vietnam, that's a huge problem. And then you also have the birth rate of North Vietnam. So every year they would send 60,000 young men down to the South, and they could keep that up indefinitely. So there are some sort of existential problems with actually sealing, ending up with a settlement like Korea. So, our policy leaders thought about that a lot, and this is not me, coming to that conclusion. I think the larger question you raise is sort of, how we left Vietnam, and we had made promises to the South Vietnamese leadership and to the people that we would always be there, we would always protect them, and we would not abandon them. And that is, in fact, what happened. So there's some very serious questions to be asked about that, and our film engages all of them. And the larger question about, what would have happened if we had stayed, we don't really engage in the what-ifs of history because we found the story of what actually happened complicated enough and challenging enough to try to tell. But we think the film will raise questions that are worth talking about for sure. The question of the impact of the Tet Offensive and its effect on public opinion and when public opinion began to shift against the war, it's important also to recognize that American public opinion was a major military asset in a way, that if the public did turn against the war, it would be difficult to continue to fight for the leadership who wants to get reelected just because it's a democracy. So they don't have that problem in Hanoi, needless to say. There's no elections and you don't have to worry about public opinion. So there's just complicated dynamics at work here. And I think what we've done is sort of delve deeply into all of them in the film.
The flood of feedback continues, and the series hasn't even come out yet. It starts on Sunday.
That's great. Yeah.
Sunday, September 17th at 9 p.m. is the launch of the Vietnam War. And this series by Lynn Novick and Ken Burns has already got people talking. Just imagine when it's out. Let me just read a few more comments. We'll grab one more phone call. Henry just says, Evan, as a proud Vietnam veteran, and yes, I say proud, I want to stand and applaud PBS for putting on a series like this. I hope what I will see is a series that is unafraid to tell the truth as they found it. I will be watching. That's from Henry. Some quick thoughts on that, Lynn?
Yeah, that's
I'm sorry, go ahead, Lynn. Yep.
No, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've kept an open mind in making the film, and we really appreciate Henry's willingness to keep an open mind in watching it. And then we look forward to hearing what he thinks and to watch the entire film, because what we found is any given time a viewer might find things they disagree with, and you have to watch the whole film to really absorb everything we're trying to say.
Gary writes to us and says, regarding our militaristic culture, we have a hard time admitting how warlike the United States is. We live in a place where camouflage is a fashion statement, and we drive Jeeps outfitted more for war than driving to the mall, and the gun culture emphasizes tactical weapons. We seem to have trouble facing who we are. That's from Gary. So, and I think Jane on the phone wants to weigh in with sort of a similar idea on how people are hardwired. Go ahead, Jane.
Oh, I was going to say that about hardwired, but Born on the 4th of July was very good in showing that at the front of the film, where you see the little boys playing with their guns, they're playing war, and they're about 5 years old or so. So they're already being conditioned to the idea that this is an appropriate, even heroic male role, and they've got the gun in the hand, and that's called play. And it's so familiar, it kind of skips by us sometimes as being benign when I don't think it is. I think it reinforces that idea. But what I wanted to comment on, really, Evan, was that clip from LBJ. It's just searing. And I'm so glad you played it, because the easy to get into and hard to get out of trap. And here was a powerful man just feeling so trapped, what to do about it. And I want to say also the comment about how do you define victory? It's as though we didn't do that there. And how does that relate to the messes that we're in today in the Middle East, where we don't define victory. We say we're there permanently. And a lot of us don't know why, other than big oil. And it seems like we make the same mistakes over and over. We get in, we can't get out. Thank you very much.
Lynn, Jane, thank you. I think, Jane, your comment calls to mind for me the idea that, yes, you get in, it's hard to get out. But also, I think Vietnam taught us that we have to find reasons to declare victory, whether they're valid or not. I mean, we're obsessed with saying we won things. I find it almost strange. But Lynn, you want to respond to some of what you heard from Jane? We got about a minute left.
Yeah, it's a beautiful comment. I was just going to speak about one of the searing interviews that we did for this film was with a woman who lost her son in Vietnam, and she raised him to be a very hardworking, patriotic, loyal American. He was born in the late 40s, and he went to Vietnam in 65. And one of the most devastating moments for me of this entire film is she describes how she sort of schooled him in what it means to be a hero as a child. And so before he went to bed, she would read him all kinds of stories. And one of them was the famous speech from Shakespeare's Henry V, in which the young men are about to go to war, and they're told, "We few, we band of brothers, he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother. And gentlemen in England now abed shall think themselves accursed they were not here." So that she read that to her son, telling him basically that to be a man, you have to fight. And if you don't do it, you will regret it, and you won't be a man. And he took that to heart, and he went to Vietnam, and he lost his life there. And so having her read that passage for our film and think about what it meant was a profound experience for me, but also a really important question that the caller raised, about things that I can't actually answer, but I think we all need to think about.
Lynn Novick and Ken Burns have told us that it's not necessarily 10 parts to give us every answer, but to make sure we're asking the kinds of questions that will help us understand the Vietnam War in its complexity and totality. It premieres Sunday, September 17th at 9 p.m. And Lynn Novick, as the co-director, it's just been an honor and a pleasure. We are all waiting to see the launch of this. I know it's been many, many years for you. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Evan. It was a great conversation. It was wonderful. Thank you.
Lynn Novick. And I think it's fair to say I've seen just enough to tell you I think it's going to be remarkable. So, listeners, I hope you've got yourself set for that starting Sunday, September 17th. And I hope you join us at the Little Theater for 2 hours of Connections on the Vietnam War, 3 weeks from today, the 24th. Short break. More Connections next.